From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The economy tops the agenda as Prime Minister Denzel Douglas announces elections in St. Kitts Nevis. Montserrat's chief minister asked to reconsider a recommendation that would stop overseas residents from voting. And Lord Kitchener, the Grand Master of Calypso, is laid to rest in Trinidad.
We find that he continued to be an exemplar even when, as we all know, there is less and less in Trinidad and Tobago today that is exemplary.
I'm Emma Joseph, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Who mismanaged the Kitchen economy? That's set to become an election theme as the country prepares for March 6 general elections. Prime Minister Denzel Douglas at the weekend announced the national poll to be held 4 months ahead of the constitutionally due date. We'll hear from him in a short while, but first, opposition leader Kennedy Simmons told us why he welcomed the decision to go to the polls.
We are going to be re-elected on the very strong performance of the government over the last 5 years. We have brought about, to a large extent, social improvement, the quality of life in particular for the people of St. Kitts and Nevis. There has been a major turnaround in our housing situation here, where we have provided over 5,000 people, over 1,000 families, with brand new affordable houses for which they are now dignified and proud.
But your opponent, Dr. Simmons, also says that you've accumulated a public debt of nearly $500 million. Isn't that a damning indictment?
That is totally untrue. Part of the debt, the national debt of this country, is due to the poor performance and the mismanagement of the Simmons government for the last 15 years before we took office.
How big is the public debt?
The public debt, I am not certain what the figure is at this time, but as I said, it is a reflection of the mismanagement of the Simmons administration for 15 years before I took government. The sugar industry in particular was left with almost $100 million in debt when I took over the office back in 1995. And we, however, have been given clear indication from the Director of Audit that never ever since we have been in office have we been unable to pay our debt.
How big was the debt that Dr. Simmons left behind?
Dr. Simmons's debt was over $200 million.
So you've helped increase it by $300 million.
I am not saying that it is now $500 million. In fact, as I said before, I am not certain at the moment what is the exact figure.
How are you proposing to pay back that public debt?
Our people, with the ability to work hard, to save, and with the investment climate that we are having, with three major companies investing in tourism in St. Kitts and Nevis, we have no problem in the repayment of our debt. We do not ask the international community to forgive us of our debt. We can pay our own debt here in St. Kitts and Nevis, as we have done in the past.
That was Dr. Denzel Douglas, and we apologize for not bringing you Dr. Kennedy Simmons. Montserrat's chief minister has been asked to reconsider a recommendation that would disallow residents overseas from voting in the next election. Over two-thirds of the electorate live abroad and are upset by the news that they will either have to prove their intention to live on the island or return home for the vote. The proposal by the Electoral Commission has now been approved by both the British and Montserratian wings of government, but many residents overseas have said that they will simply have nowhere to live if they were to return. So I asked Chief Minister Brandt whether this was the case.
No, the necessary housing is clearly not here, but we have to deal with the situation as best we could as it is.
Don't you think that you're going to have to compromise then?
We have compromised. We have said that if you come back to Montserrat and demonstrate that you intend to live here, that you would be able to vote. But I think the most important question is that two-thirds of the population is outside the island. And how could you have two-thirds of the population electing a government for one-third who intend and who do live on the island? To me, that is unfair.
Well, BBC Caribbean reports been hearing complaints already from Montserratians living both in London and New York. And they want to know, is there a chance that the government would reconsider, considering the fact that they don't have the housing there in Montserrat to return home?
You must bring finality to a matter like this, and we have considered it. We have pondered it for a long, long time, and we have come to a conclusion which we intend to stand by.
But you could stand accused of penalizing people for not coming home when there isn't the necessary housing. Is your government actually making active steps to rebuild enough houses for them to be able to return home in time to vote?
We are making every effort to build houses and to have accommodation for people. But clearly we would not have enough accommodation for all those who are abroad. And let me say that there is not one institution on earth, at least no political institution, that is not subject to accusations. No matter what you do, one side or the other is going to be dissatisfied with it. But you have to do what you feel is right in all the circumstances.
But do you think that's the right decision? I mean, essentially what you're saying is, okay, yes, Montserratians can vote, but they have to come home to do it. And for some Montserratians, it means that they'll have nowhere to live just so that they could vote.
As I told you before, the decision has been taken. We are sorry that all of them cannot come home and be accommodated on island, but having regard to all the facts, I believe the decision that we have taken is the most reasonable in all the circumstances.
Montserrat's Chief Minister David Brandt. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The contempt of court case involving a Bahamian radio talk show host is still not over. Obi Wilshkam was charged last month for refusing to tell the coroner how he got hold of a letter that was written by a death row inmate who allegedly committed suicide before he was put to death. Jessica Robertson has that story.
Supreme Court Justice Ricardo Marks upheld the coroner's court order to have radio talk show host Obi Wilshkam sent to prison. Mr. Wilshkam, also an opposition senator, received a 4-day prison sentence when he refused to tell coroner Winston Saunders where he got a letter written by death row inmate John Higgs. Higgs allegedly committed suicide in a death row cell the day before he was scheduled to hang for the murder of his wife, Joan. Mr. Wilshkam refused to divulge the information, saying as a journalist he had a right and an obligation to protect the confidentiality of his sources. But this morning, Justice Marks denied Mr. Wilshkam's request to have the sentence quashed. He acknowledged the need for journalist source confidentiality issue, but said that in this case, he had to weigh that against public interest and national security. The weapon Higgs used to slit his wrists has never been found, and the court had questioned whether the person who gave Mr. Wilshkam the letter could have been involved in the inmate's death. Mr. Wilshkam has been given 14 days to have his case heard before the Court of Appeal. He says he will take the matter to the highest court, the Privy Council in London, to try and have the sentence overturned. In Nassau, Bahamas, I'm Jessica Robertson for BBC Caribbean Report.
A group of Virgin Islanders are seeking to have their nationality adapted so that they can be considered Caribbean people. Although their citizenship is either British or American, Virgin Islanders say their ancestry is much closer to their regional neighbours than the name on their passports. As Bevan Springer reports, they now want to be treated as co-equals in the Caribbean.
They are sick and tired of being described as y'all Americans. By birth, they are citizens of the United States and Great Britain, but a group of Virgin Islanders in New York say they are Caribbean people at heart, and it's about time the Caribbean and its diaspora recognize the Virgin Islands as an integral part of the region. Speaking yesterday during a Virgin Islands Black History Month program at the National Black Theater in Harlem, Kevin Hughes, president of Virgin Islanders United, says he's often distraught when the Virgin Islands flag is absent from Caribbean events in the city. The VI activist, who hails from St. Thomas, says there's no denying that his islands are territories of the U.S., but its rich cultural legacy confirms that Virgin Islanders are indeed West Indians.
As Caribbean people, there's no reason why we shouldn't be given that respect. I don't know whether it may be a bit of jealousy on some people's part, other people's part it might be some ignorance, but whatever it is, we want to address that and we want to change that. We're proud Caribbean people and that's who we are.
That's not the opinion, however, of Arthur Todman, whose parents immigrated from the British Islands and settled in St. Thomas, giving him the rights of an American. He says Virgin Islanders and other Caribbean people in the U.S., for that matter, ought to focus on integrating into American life. Virgin Islanders are Americans full stop, he argues, explaining that even the Dominican Republic community in Washington Heights, for example, is recognizing the importance of the American way.
They emphasize learning the language that we use, which is English, which means suppressing the Spanish somewhat, so that they can integrate faster and participate in various levels of a society, you see. So it's very perplexing and confusing to me when there's an emphasis by people who are already Americans.
While there's support for Mr. Todman's position, Kevin Hughes is of a completely different opinion.
I totally disagree with that. I'm a proud Caribbean man, and that's all I will ever be. Yes, I'm an American, but that's secondary to my Caribbean answer.
Kevin Hughes and his group clearly contend that their roots are grounded in the Caribbean. But will others in the Virgin Islands and the wider Caribbean ever grant them the acceptance they request? Only time will tell. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Bevan Springer in New York.
Thousands of people turned out to pay their last respects to the Grand Master of Calypso, Lord Kitchener, who was laid to rest today at the Trinity Cathedral in Port of Spain. Lord Kitchener died last Friday from a rare blood disease in the Mount Hope Medical Hospital at the age of 77. Tony Fraser was at the ceremony and sent this report.
Trinity Cathedral in downtown Port of Spain was packed with Kitchener's people. It seems as if every Calypsonian was there. Sparrow, perhaps the only Calypsonian, to challenge Kitchener's durability, inventiveness, relevance, and as a voice of the people. But today, Sparrow, Terror, Gypsy, Chalkdust, Singing Sandra, Relator, and the young generation of Rudder and Marcel Montano, they were all there for the Grand Master. But overshadowing all of them were the thousands of people who loved and revered Kitchener. The Anglican Cathedral in Port of Spain is a large church and was packed in every square inch. Sad faces, mournful faces, and those who celebrate the life of one of the greatest of all Calypsonians and a wonderful human being. In her eulogy, musician Pat Bishop said it all for those in the nation and throughout the Caribbean.
Let us understand that we are crying for ourselves, because his passing has drawn a line, sharp and clear, between hope and possibility on the one hand, disillusionment and despondency on the other. And when we look at the example of his life, his conduct, his deportment, always with the hat, the suit, the tie, the songs masking naughtiness with the double entendre, singing of persons and circumstances with wit and style, and never with malice, we find that he continued to be an exemplar, even when, as we all know, there is less and less in Trinidad and Tobago today that is exemplary.
But perhaps the words that rang through the loudest were those of Kitchener's teenage daughter talking about the love she shared with her father.
And I would just like to tell him that I love him so much. And one day I will be with him again, and I know that for sure. I would miss him because I know that everything I ever wanted and everything that I ever needed, he was there for me and he gave it to me. He's the best person that I have ever known, and he is my hero and my role model. And as today is Valentine's Day, I just want to give him this rose and say to him that, Daddy, you will always be my Valentine.
And then it was the time for Rudder and Sparrow to sing farewell to Kitchener.
Grandmaster, I'll always remember jumping when a steel van passed.
Tony Fraser reporting from Port of Spain on the funeral of Lord Kitchener for BBC Caribbean Report.
Sugary, peppery, Kitch was never ever one for class.
Tony Fraser ends today's edition of BBC Caribbean Report. I'm Emma Joseph, saying goodbye and leaving you with the Kitchener classic, Rain-O-Rama.
They moan and they fuss and they say we won, we fed, and they abuse and they cuss and they say this is